What's the password?
Don't talk about it. Be about it.
Welcome in to the To The Point Home Services VIP room, where we invite you, the listeners in, to hang alongside some of the biggest, baddest, and most successful VIPs of the home services industries. You never know which surprise guest will show up next. So let's get this party started.
Hey, what's up, Tinfoil listeners? It's your boy, Chris, sitting in beautiful Seabrook Island, South Carolina, from a nice Memorial Day weekend. I got my boys on here, Mr. AG and Chatty P. What's up, boys? You guys have a good Memorial Day weekend?
It's great. Awesome race. Loved it.
Dude, the Indianapolis 500 this year was fantastic. Like 70 passes, closest field finish in history. What a cool race.
Yeah, the new helicopter thing at the beginning of the race, which they started 2 years ago, has got to be one of the coolest traditions on the face of the planet.
Yeah, that's so badass. Watching those things fly. And then Gronk was in there this year. Rob Gronkowski was one of the copters.
Well, a few of my buddies took like pictures from the stands, and those things are like literally like 200 feet from you sitting in the stands.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I've never seen it in person, but I love the new tradition of adding that in there. It was pretty awesome. AG, did you do anything?
No, I didn't do anything that exciting. But I did see a Peterman Indy car picture showed to me. You got an Indy car in your office now?
So in the back.
Okay.
In the back there where it's wide open and the glass doors, I had one. And my buddy had one. I had him. It's actually painted. And then the stickers on there are just like decals. But yeah, it's pretty sweet.
It is pretty sweet. Saw a picture of that. That's.
There we go.
Yeah.
We don't have that. Yeah. We put it in here.
He's doing. I got to pick up my game.
Yeah. We put it in here Thursday. And I think almost everybody's kids have already been through the office. Like it's got little handprints all over it. So we got to clean it up.
That's pretty. Yeah. That was pretty cool. I'm going to put pull our guest in, John Waldorf, Vice President over of SD's services down in Georgia, Atlanta. Atlanta. Got a 77-year-old business, right? 76, 77, something like that.
Yes.
Welcome, man.
I wish it was hot Atlanta. It's kind of cool and rainy Atlanta.
Well, I don't want to brag, but up here in South Carolina, the only thing that's missing is me wearing a pastel shirt and khaki shorts, because that shit ain't happening. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Not yet.
It's coming. It's coming.
It ain't for me. It ain't for me. I don't think that's it. But I will say, like, this is my second time being at this house. It's one of our investment houses that we invest into with a few other families about, I think, 2-3 years ago. I love the South. I love the Low Country. But interesting thing happened is my little niece, or no, not my niece. We had some friends over. And the daughter went in the ocean. She's like 10 or 11, Fallon's age. She got stung by a stingray, a little bitty stingray, right in her foot, which I guess is like super common to happen. I'm pretty sure Fallon was never getting in the ocean again because she was there with her. It was like traumatic. But the funny thing is that we have we have lots of girls in the family. It's my sister's brother and his wife, and so my nieces and nephews are all down, and the lifeguard that came over was worth the stingray poke into the girl's ankle because for entertainment for the rest of the girls who were there. So apparently they thought the little youngster was like Baywatch. Perverts. Well, John, welcome to the show, man. We're excited to have you on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Chris.
John and I got to hang out together, guys, probably been maybe 2 months ago now, over in Beverly Hills too. A couple of the guys have been on. We had Jason Anson on. And
Hugh Joyce.
We had Hugh on, which was awesome. Dude, that clip, the clip of Hugh when we asked him the question around what was it, the what part of the home service streets? I don't want to ruin it because we're gonna ask, John the same question.
I saw it. Yep.
Oh, that clip was awesome. He's
about to get solicited for hell and back. From body cameras and smart glasses. But he said there's no technology out there. I was like, Hugh, man, bless your heart.
time to get blown up.
Yeah, well, I was up in New York at the Avoca office whenever I was interviewing Hugh, and he was there randomly 2 weeks before I was there. So that was kind of crazy. Yeah. But so shout out to one of our big sponsors, Avoca. We also have a sponsor in Basic Capital that we rarely talk about that I have to get on here. I got to meet these guys and talk to them more. One of our newest sponsors came on board is Yelp, gentlemen. Yelp. That's going to be an interesting podcast. I know I was chatting with you a little bit about it, Aaron, but you know, chat will be kind of similar to what we did with Jeff Kipp. So that should be a pretty interesting episode when we get that one booked. And then, John, did you guys end up bringing on our other sponsors? Send the email marketing. You were there at the rollout.
Yeah. We signed up. We sent our second email last Thursday. So kind of focusing on plumbing right now.
Okay.
Some plumbing leads. So good. The first one produced some revenue, produced some leads. And the second one, I haven't checked results yet. Being a holiday weekend.
Well, that's good, because if it did, yeah, that's going to be a really awkward conversation.
But I got real awkward fast.
Well, you know, Chris, when you do the daily huddle and it opens with, man, we need calls. We need calls like today. You used to be able to go pull the lever on local services and generate some calls that day, but now not so much. So, you know, to your point, you throw out their email marketing, and I was just like, what? Chris Rhino Strategies email marketing. But hey, you know, it got to the end user. We got some calls booked, generated some revenue.
Good, man.
Appreciate it.
Shit, all this shit adds up anymore these days. So,
yeah.
Well, listen, let's jump into this too. Essie's is a well respected office. I've known about you guys for years. Always wanted to partner up with you guys back in my Rhino days. Obviously, you're in the market with one of my, you know, good buddies, Ken Haynes, you know, down cool. So it's you guys still independent, man, still doing your thing. 77-year-old business. It's a cool history of the company. If you go onto the website and read the about us page, I love whenever these old businesses have such cool backgrounds and stories. And you guys are called Carrier Dealer Hall of Fame, ACA Contractor of the Year, like got some big accolades, but. There's a lot of West Coasters, you know, that might not know who you are as well, you know, as I do or we do. So maybe if you would just, I know you came in at 2001 into the business, but maybe just go ahead and give a quick, let the listeners know to, you know, just where the business is at today. If you're okay sharing the size of the company for some perspective, that would be great. But then just a little high level of what all, you know, where all you're at, you know, in Georgia.
Sure. Thanks, Chris. Yeah, we were founded in 1949 by Nap B. Estes, and his given name is Napoleon Bonaparte Estes. So he started the company back in 1949 on the day that his son Tommy, who's now the CEO, was born. And initially, we were strictly HVAC throughout his career. When Tommy came in, Tommy had a little more of a focus on residential side of HVAC. And introduced, we give them credit for introducing one of the first maintenance agreements in the Atlanta, Georgia area, and grew the business that way. Stayed HVAC until 2008 when we diversified into plumbing. Started out just real small plumbing department, just marketing to our existing database, and it has taken off. And today it's a significant part of our business. Got into the electrical department mainly to support HVAC. But now it's grown and generating its own revenue. Brian Estes is the third generation family owner and operator. And all of our growth has come through organic growth. We have not acquired anybody, still independent, family owned operated. Today last year we were like right at $45 million in total revenue. Obviously the next BHAG is 50 mil. And then after 50 mil, you know, we're on jettison right to 100. We had purposely spent the last 5 years focusing on profit instead of revenue. Still had revenue growth, but we definitely got the profit where we needed it and wanted it. And so we're just sitting in a perfect position to scale up now. And so that's why we're shooting for 50 mil this year.
So when you came in 2001, was Tommy already president at that time?
Yeah, Tommy was already president. So the department, uh, the, the managers in the different departments were aging. And so I was brought in as operations manager initially to build a new team, management and leadership. And very interesting looking back on that is we did that 100% outside this industry. We brought in guys who could manage processes, procedures, and people, and didn't focus on their field experience specifically in HVAC, plumbing, or electrical. And that was a complete flip on the head of how we had existed the other 50 something years. But today, that whole team is still here, still with us, and doing a fantastic job.
Did you come from outside the industry, or were you?
Yes and no. I was military, and then after military, I was selling ads. Called on a contractor down in Macon, and he asked me, had I ever thought about selling heat and air? And I was like, nope, but sounds interesting. So started there, was did that for 6 years, and then got recruited by Amana to be a TSM. Estes at the time was the largest Amana contractor in the country, and so they became my customer. And that's how I met Brian and Tommy. Right after Goodman bought Amana, could kind of see the writing on the wall, you know, right? We're not going to mess with it. We're going to let it run and operate like it is. And immediately started messing with it. So they recruited me at the time to come in here to help our operations and start rebuilding that leadership team.
Hey, by the way, before we go, Aaron, I will get a question. I just want to acknowledge Napoleon Bonaparte. That was what NAP stood for? I had no clue.
Me neither. Only person I know is Napoleon Hill from Think and Grow Rich. And I've never heard of
or Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah, Napoleon Dynamite. There you go. Yeah.
That's why Brian refers to me as Little NAP. So you've never met Brian. He's a very large man. And so he says I have the Napoleon complex. So he calls me Little NAP.
That's not very nice.
Jeez. Yeah, that's it.
Well, compared to him, I am.
So you're with a family business, and obviously you stayed with this family business. Like, and in a world and in a market, especially Atlanta, there's a lot of private equity. You know, what's been the reason for you guys to stay private? What's been that journey? Why does that matter to you guys so much as an organization, culturally wise or structural wise? Maybe tell us a little bit about, you know, what that means in the backbone of this organization and for the future.
Well, you said it. You said culture. So way back when we went through a big consolidation process, back then Tommy was running the company and he took a big stand and was very public about it. So to us, this is just, you know, round two, round three, whatever. And we sat back and watched, and we've watched private equity, which there's some great private equity companies out there. I'm not bashing them. But the culture, you watch the culture change over time. And, you know, we say we're family owned and operated, but we're also, you know, my last name's not Estes, but we're still, all the teammates here are an extension of that family. And we own and operate this, this business like a big family. And the most important thing in the world is the culture. Private equity can't come into a business and duplicate what we have here in the way of our culture. And you know, it was kind of cliche the first time I heard it, and I give Ray Isaac credit for saying it. And I don't know if he did or not, but we're going to get the credit here. You know, congratulations to him getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. But he used to always say, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And it's cliche as I thought that was, I bet I've repeated that 1,000 times. So, because it's very true. You can have the best strategy in the world, but if your culture is suffering inside and outside the locker room, then you have very limited success with that.
John, how have you?
Go ahead.
I was just going to just touch on the culture piece. I mean, obviously, I think all of us have been through this where, you know, as the company grows, it becomes harder and harder to make sure that culture stays what it was when maybe you were 20 or 30 people, and then you start getting into the hundreds of people. What do you guys like? Maybe give the listeners some examples of like things that you've done, especially as you've scaled, that really keep that culture ingrained in how you do it and what you do and so on and so forth.
yeah, you're right. It's a challenge. And you hear that. I mean, we heard it through growth. You know, you're operating back in the good old days without policies, and then you start implementing them, and people hear, oh, you're changing, you're getting corporate. I tell you, one of the simplest things that we've done, started probably 35 years ago as a trip from Amana, and then they stopped doing it, and Estes has continued. So we have a long, hot summer here in Georgia in these, you know, 140-degree attics. And so at the end of that summer, we want to reward not only the guys in the field who are doing the work, you know, the people in the office who are customer facing. And so for the last 35 years, when summer's over, we take all the field personnel down to Florida or Hilton Head, and they get a choice. They get to go golfing or fishing. But the first thing we're going to do when we get down there is we're going to have a big group dinner and make sure those guys and gals know that, you know, you're valuable, you're important, and we thank you. I've had people leave Estes and then turn around and come back. And I had a guy sitting in a state technical seminar. He said, I will come back as long as I'm eligible to go on that trip. Because he said that. He said, I did not realize what we had until I left here. So, but yeah, I mean, it's the little things too, man. I mean, you know, celebrate successes quickly, handle negatives behind closed doors, you know, protecting that culture. Once you get up to a certain level of leadership, being interested in not only your teammates, but their family members, you know about their spouses, know about their children, know about what they're going through. So it's just, it's important, but to your point, it does get hard when it has to be implemented, and it gets, the more personnel you get, the more difficult it does. So I'm not gonna lie. We have every team member's picture on the wall in the hall with their names. And there's times I have to run down there. Like, this guy was just talking too. but you know.
So on that culture thing, I agree with Chad, because we both have grown businesses, and you know, we're both crossing that $100 million mark this year. And it gets challenging to keep this, you know, I don't want to call it mythical statement, because sometimes I think culture is just kind of said, but it's like you have to identify what it really is. Right. What it is different in different environments, different things, but culture does. I do believe that culture does, you know, eat strategy for sure. If you have a good culture, you'll win. But I heard you say earlier at the beginning of the call, you said a couple of things I want to jump in here. One is you said we stopped for a couple of years on growth and focus on profit. Maybe you could explain why. What was that about? Something happened there. And then you said we're going to go to 40 to 50 and then we're going to go all the way to 100. So obviously you guys are now in the machine of we want to scale. So maybe tell us what happened there, and now why are you guys going to more of an enterprise business versus, and it can still be family operated, because we know we're still owned operated at this set, but that's an enterprise business. This is a completely different dynamic from a $40 million business, which is a great business, by the way, super successful. But going to an enterprise business. So maybe tell us a little bit about that. And then why have you guys now decided maybe these years later, we want to be an enterprise business and go to 100 million.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, growth eats cash, right? And especially when we're trying to do it organically, we're not acquiring anybody's business or database or customer base or well, we're not yet. We'll keep that option on the table.
All right.
But yeah, it's just knowing how much growth eats cash, and wanted to do it strategically and intelligently. So we want to be poised for that, for that phase, and even purposefully being willing to accept a little bit less margin to get that volume and get that growth. Because, you know, through the all the price increases and the tariffs, your revenue could grow and you really didn't grow in volume. You could look back and say our revenue went up and we installed less systems last year. So it's looking at that, you know, that was looking at that apple that you're going to take the big bite out of strategically, and not fooling yourself that because of all these price increases, you actually did grow when you did. So, but yeah, we're poised for it now. And, you know, every option's on the table. We've always been real loyal to our vendors, but, you know, some hard decisions may have to be made to get where we need to be.
To the Point listeners, listen up. What if the biggest thing holding back your business isn't marketing or hiring, but your bennies? The benefits for home service companies, a better 401k can be the difference between great techs and losing them to the shop right down the street. Basic Capital, our newest sponsor, is the only 401k built to actually put your team on a real path to retirement. Companies that switch over see higher participation, happier teams, and dramatically low turnover because your crew finally gets a plan that's a true benefit, not just a checkbox. Don't wait until your best people walk. Make the move and click the link below to get 12 months with zero employer fees when you join Basic Capital. You're spending thousands to make the phone ring. But if your CSRs aren't picking up or converting, you might as well light it on fire. And what are the largest businesses in the country doing about this? They use Avoka, the leading AI platform in the trades. $100 million businesses like H.L. Bowman are operating with only 9 CSRs because Avoka handles up to 80% of the calls. Plus, Avoka follows up with your leads, grades your CSR calls, and helps you strategize. So my suggestion, go with the leading company. Check out avoca.ai. That's avoca.ai. Click the link below.
Yeah. I would agree that's a good point for a lot of people over the last couple of years. There has been some growth. Like you see average sale go up and you're like, look, our average sale went up. And it's like, did it? Or just the pricing go up, right? So did we actually get better? Or, you know, did the pricing? Because there's been a lot of price increases over the last couple of years that to grow. So, but what are you stating that you wanted to balance that back out? And then you guys were going for more of a cash play saying we're going to expand and grow in the next 3 years. So we're going to spend the next 3 years compiling some cash, getting ourselves in position to go attack the market. Is that kind of where your guys is at today?
Yeah. And having the ability to increase your marketing budget, as a percentage of sales. We've always been, you know, spend 5% to maintain 10% for aggressive growth. We were always somewhere in between, around the 6.5% to 7%, but having that available to attack through marketing, which is very expensive in Atlanta, but also having the fleet where it needs to be, having the number of employees. So if we increase call count, are we going to be able to catch those? Are we at capacity or below capacity? And we have spent we just graduated. We have an internal technical school we call Tech Builder. And we just graduated our 26th class. So we've been outside the market now for not just management and leadership, but field personnel. So we bring them in, we train them the way we want things done and send them out into the market. And so we're poised to start catching some market share. So we're focusing on new customers, and there's a couple of different things we're doing to make sure that we trap those and keep them. And so all of that requires your investment. Training's not free. Training's not cheap. But yeah, we've now got an army ready to go to market, and we've got 2 more Tech Builder classes scheduled for this year. So yeah, we're ready.
I'm gonna follow up with one other question that I think Chad and I can relate to as we scaled from 40 to 50 and beyond. Was a shortfall in management capability. And I heard you say you brought people in from outside the industry and other areas to grow. And I think what kind of investment do you have in that management infrastructure? Because I could say, Chad, maybe you can jump in on this one too. I think we both felt some of this pain as we started fresh holding into these numbers, right? That the management keeping up with this enterprise, let's call it, for lack of a better term, I don't know if I love that language, but we'll call it that, an enterprise business. So like, when you think about that, what are you guys doing to make sure that all of your management is prepared and ready to scale and grow with the business as you venture over that 50 to 100 million mark? What are some things that you're putting in place? What are things you're working on? What are some things that you're doing now to prepare that team for that growth?
I'm sorry, was that to Chad or me?
No, to you. I said Chad. Okay. You. I already know what Chad screwed up. I already know what Chad screwed up.
I know, though. I want to hear it, so I don't.
He already knows what I screwed up. We're trying to ask you, so you can be proactive for people that are on the same journey, thinking, "Hey, we went to 40, we're going over to the 50. How are we doing this?" Right? So, you know, it's you're in it, right? So, yeah. How are you thinking about it?
Well, first of all, it was to get the leadership team together. We just did this last week, and what we did is we went over. Here's our goal. Let's discuss what are our obstacles to our goal first, and let's lay them all out there. And we went through each and every one whether it was software related, personnel related, labor, time, size of our building, all of these different obstacles. And then we roundtable discussed, you know, how can we overcome these? And let's, you know, what got us to 45 million and is not going to get us to 100 million. So let's discuss that we may have to investigate doing some things outside of the box. For example, we've never participated in big box store programs. But let's not take that off the table. You know, you gotta be careful and protect yourself or that you start getting that drug and then you start focusing more on that drug and less on your organic growth. But we've never discussed it. Let's put it on the table. Let's look at it. Let's see what it looks like. Let's look at expanding our footprint in the Atlanta market. I mean, physically expanding our footprint. Let's put another storefront on the Northeast corridor. Let's face it, we're a little weak. And so you get the conversation going, and people by nature, especially when you're in your 45 million is great and we are successful and we are profitable, you can get comfortable. And it's, you know, it's our job as leaders to make sure there is a certain level of uncomfort in the leadership team. And but make sure everybody knows what the goal is, what the mission is, how we're going to get there. And then simultaneously, because let's face it, we used to be known as the youngest management team in our mixed group, and we're not young anymore. So what's that next level of leadership that we have up and coming look like? And so we identified a few of those guys, put them in place where they can have an impact, and start just mentoring them to get ready to one day be the general manager, be the operations manager, open the new storefront, just whatever that looks like.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I would say that I feel like I didn't learn along the way, but I've now realized it is, you know, as you get bigger, and John, I'm sure you've seen this, is that everything becomes so siloed because it's so big. So like, you know, where it used to be when it's, you know, 40 people running around, like everybody knows, everybody's talking to everybody, all of this stuff. But then you get this massive thing and you have all these siloed like entities within the business. And what we noticed was like people are making a decision, not understanding how that decision affects either upstream, downstream, wherever it is. And they don't understand all of the things that we never taught them. And so you've got the service manager not understanding how the marketing function works. And actually, we can't spend more dollars to get more leads if our conversion and average ticket aren't where they're supposed to be. The same could be said for if our call center isn't booking and cancellations are high and we're kind of all over the place, like how all of this works together. And so what we've really tried to do is we have an all hands kind of operations meeting now, where it used to be like, hey, we're going to have the call center meeting and then the dispatch. It's like, get everybody in the same room. Let's look at the same dashboard and let's understand like where it really is the problem, because we have a tendency just to blame everybody else except for our own thing as to what the problem. We don't have enough leads. The leads aren't good enough. All of these things, when it's like, no, it all works together. Even as it gets bigger, it just becomes more difficult to work together. But I think that's been one of the biggest things, I think, for our managers, to educate them on how the whole business operates, not just like the plumbing service department and how it operates. Like, yeah, we got that down, but like there's a bunch of different moving parts that allow you to accomplish the goal of the day and of the month and of the year.
Chad, have you been in my office the last 2 weeks?
it was a tough lesson. Like I just like pound my head against my desk. I'm like, what don't these people get about this? And then finally, once you bring them all together, you're like, oh, then it, yeah, didn't tell them about that. Didn't tell them about this. Didn't tell them about that over there. And I expect them to make decisions. And it's like, you dummy, you can't expect someone to know what to do if you don't show them and explain to them how it all works.
Okay. You hit the nail on the head with marketing and operations and their relationship. That's why I said, have you been spying on me or something? Cause yeah, one part of it's like, I need more calls, but it's the marketing department's, you know, job or fault. Yeah. Or whatever. And the two, operations and marketing, man, they have got to be hand in hand.
Hey, we have a guest joining us now, Jamie T, the cool today man in the house. Jamie, you just came. I'm sure you got to hear plenty of that conversation you get up to. We got John Waldorf from Estes.
Hey, Jamie.
Yeah, P Room.
Hey, John. Hey, guys. Good to see everybody.
Good to see you. Sorry I kept talking there. I got to get used to all these new chimes and all this stuff about what's going on. I was just like, what is that sound? What is going on?
Well, don't worry. Someday it's going to be real ear ringing when you get to my age.
Hey, Jamie got the pastel notice.
Yeah. Pastel, baby. Jamie, hi, man. Speaking of growth, and one of the legends doing it, this guy right here is definitely one. And I got to give him all the props in the world. I learned how to sell sewers from an HVAC guy down in Tampa. I don't know if you remember that, Jamie.
I do remember that with John Gennaro's company.
John Gennaro's. Yes. I was sitting there. You remember me. I had less gray back then, and I looked a little younger, but you were up there coaching, and I wrote notes and notes and notes, and 93 or free drain flip, how to flip a lead, how to do all stuff. I give you all the credit for that. I appreciate that. Just learned a lot from you over the years. So thank you. Thank you.
You were expanding in the world. You were going from Columbus to Miami, if I remember correctly.
It was Fort Myers area, and I screwed that up, so I'm back. No, oh, not ended that. So lessons learned. Let's not talk about my failure.
Don't worry, you'll end up in Florida someday.
I will. I know I will. I love the weather and the taxes. So,
hey, Aaron, you want to go somewhere down the growth path, right?
We were talking about that, and I just said, here's a guy right here that has seen it all, right? Growing in the marketplace, done the stuff, and talking about the growth. So, I don't have anything else to add on that.
You talked about John, you guys being the first service agreement, I think, in Atlanta or something like that. I mean, Jamie D came on, we did the podcast, I don't even know how long ago it was, about how he built that.
Well, it was right after COVID. It was like April of 2020 or something like that.
Yeah, when we talk all about how you're scaling cool today with with the service agreement, like what you did with it, how you leverage the service agreements and all that stuff, which is pretty interesting. But John and I were at a peer group about a couple months ago, and we were over in Beverly Hills with a handful of guys, and almost all independent, because Tim Kropp's, I think, service experts now, or he's service experts, Rob Metcalf, another great, great company, great guy.
Oh, yeah.
So we were over there, and I was just thought, man, let's bring on a string of guys that are still, independently owned businesses running that are players, that are bigger players, and just see what they're up to and talking through it. So, Jamie, that's what we're kind of doing. And part of this new whole vibe is just bringing in different, all my friends and people who are either still in business, out of business, who cares where they're at, but have done some things. And so it would be good to have you jump on here with us last minute.
It was great to hear. Actually, it was great to hear Chad's discussion, because nothing's changed in the 7 years I've been out of day-to-day operations. Nothing's changed. You guys hit the nail on the head with that last discussion.
So, Jamie, as we talk about this for John, too, as we do talk about that, as you say, Chad, I agree, Chad hit it on the head. But you've seen scalability by market, by location, all the challenges early on before any of us got in the game. And then eventually, I don't know if I call bow out, I guess we still had operational stuff. When you think about a company that they're doing right now in the Atlanta market, growing, doing stuff, like what are some of the things that you think at this 45 to going to 70 or going to 50 and plus are going to be the biggest challenges for organizations that are independent against, the equity partners, good or bad, that are out there? Because there's a lot of guys doing it. So what's some thoughts that you'd have for John? And I secretly want to hear myself, by the way.
Well, I never thought I'd say this, but the uniqueness itself of being independent is a marketing tool. Inside the business, you say, well, it's good, it's bad, whatever. To most consumers, being independent is always good. Being local is always good.
Yeah.
You've become unique in the fact that the market's changed so much. And I've always been a believer in branding. You have to brand your uniqueness, because it's difficult for other people to copy. So whatever you are, that is unique about your company, Be unique and push it out in the brand in the market, and that's how you get more market share. I know there's a lot of change in the last 8 years in marketing, and Chris has been up close on front row seat on that. But you know, the difficulty is things that worked 2 years ago don't work now, and it's very frustrating to marketing people. It's very frustrating to operations. Thus, you get that collision. It used to be pretty easy to turn on Google and get a few leads for your service department, and they're happy. Not that way anymore.
Yeah, right before you came on, actually, John had brought that up and had mentioned something about that too. It's like you used to be able to walk down, go flip on the switch, run the Google ads, and go, right? It's not the world we live in now. I do think that, though, branding your uniqueness is important. What you stand for and what you stand against in the community and to your customer base is important. So, but it's harder to get that out today probably than ever. Maybe not with the platform digital. Do you still think that as a company is thinking about growing and scaling, do you still believe in mass media, radio, TV, like all those areas to get those messages out? Do you think that would be a great path for people too?
Yes. I believe in the old adage, you know, you hedgehog your way into it. You know, if you're a smaller company, and of course, Estes is not a smaller company.
For sure.
They just have a gigantic market. Yeah. I mean, they're just, what, 6.5 million people in the Atlanta metro? I can't remember. But that's just monstrous. But whatever you do, hyper-focus on that channel. Hyper-focus in that box. And then repeat the message. I mean, I think I've heard consumers need to hear a very similar message 3 to 5 times a week. And it still takes a very long time for them to recognize it in their conscious from the subconscious. So if there's just too many choices in marketing today. I can't believe it. It blows my mind from 5 years what's changed with that.
I would agree. Something I'll buy following up. John, what do you guys do? Are you guys doing similar stuff? Do you do radio? I know you said you want to expand. You spend about 5 to 7% on marketing. What are some of the things you guys are doing? And how are you using your leverage of being independent, a family owned? Are you actually using that to leverage anything? And by the way, I just want to be clear on this. Like, I have nothing against either way. I'm independent. I believe in private equity. I think all of them have been good, both sides of the industry. I don't think there's one or the other. I think you need both. I think they do a lot of great things, but I do think there's a little bit of competitive edge for somebody like yourself in a large market like that you should lean into. So what are you guys doing for the guys that are independent?
Yeah, no, the 5 to 7 was like spend 5% just to maintain where you are, 7 to start growing, 10% for aggressive growth. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're very diversified. And to Jamie's point, and I think even Paul Kelly spoke to this, that, you know, we can also go into a smaller ad arena and just dominate it, right? Just buy every spot that day, every Tuesday and Thursday, buy every spot so that you're hearing it over and over and over again, and it's relatively inexpensive. But then we still have to be in the big players, you know, the WSB TV in Atlanta, the billboards, we're doing email marketing now, in addition to the newsletters. But yeah, we're very, very diversified, and we definitely hammer the family owned and operated. So, I don't know if you guys saw this post on LinkedIn probably 6 months ago, and it was like a color wheel, and it had all the private equities and
yes.
And I don't know if y'all read the comments, but I was reading the comments, and the comments were, and I agree with you, I don't have anything against them, but the comments were overwhelmingly negative. And so I took that and I took it to our marketing department and I said, look, this is right, wrong, or indifferent. This is the general public's opinion of these local businesses being bought up by private equity. So we're on the right track. We just got to hammer the hell out of that message. Okay. We're family owned and operated, third generation, got fourth generation in college or just graduating college. So we're going to hammer that message till somebody tells us to stop.
Yeah, and I think private equity, you know, I had this discussion on LinkedIn with Julian Scadden, who is the president of Nexstar,
yeah,
who was kind of beating up private equity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, you know, is my position a little jaded? Sure. I mean, you know, I sold to private equity, but I sold to a private equity group of HVAC home service operators that still run it today. So they have that. They bring your type of logic to the arena with the investors as far as what should a company be. You serve, you provide value, and then you get profit. You know, you don't profit and then hope for value. Not all private equity are going to be like that. Some are coming in, they're just, you know, Wharton School trained accountants, and they're going to come in and they're going to look at your marketing and say, 5%, we can go to 3%. And we could pick up 2 points on the bottom line. And all of us know, you stop feeding the beast is going to starve. So private equity is like individual operators. You guys have been around the country. People as skilled as you guys and are struggling in business, right? And then you guys are highly successful in business. Why? Right? Private equity is run by people. They're going to all be independently successful and independently not successful. It's the ones that are just going in and strip mining those great brands are the ones that are hurting the actual private equity name.
Yeah.
I would agree with you on that. I don't think that there's any bad on this situation. It depends on the infrastructure. And there's good private equity companies. There's good independent companies. There's bad independent companies. There's they're everywhere, right? So, but I would say that what's really the difference between a private equity company that's coming to buy it or an enterprise single-owned business, so your point, that's $100 million or 40 to 50 or 50 million, right? And beyond, it's kind of becoming the same thing. You just own and operate it still, right? It has a lot of infrastructure, has a lot of the same resources, it has a lot of the same things. And what ends up happening, even though you're promoting, you're the independently, you're still the big dog in the neighborhood, right? Regardless if you're privately held or not, right? So now you're being, the thing is, you're not being any differently attacked from the smaller operators at times, in a sense, right? And all of this works in the model it does, right? This is capitalism, right? I guess if you want to use that, or I know people don't love that maybe these days as much, but it's the reality. So there is this up and down model in that. But I think there's parts that you should be able to leverage all the different pieces of them for your brand messaging or for your scalability or for your independent, you know, opportunity and wealth or your team's wealth, the people that have worked with you. So there's many ways to navigate all this. And I think we're just talking about, can you leverage this, John, and your point as an independent? Because I think that's what you guys hang your hat really heavy on, right? Everything I read about your business, everything you guys did. And you should lean all the way in on that because that's your story and that's who you are, right? So look forward to hearing more about that. So I think we've gone through that topic. I don't know if you got something else to add, Chris, or somebody else.
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, HouseCall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
No, it's just the belief. When you say, you know, when you say 100 million, that sounds really large, and it really is. But then you look at 2026 HVAC market, Atlanta, Georgia, supposed to be 3.4 billion. You're 1.5% of that. There's so much room.
Yep.
There's so much room for growth. Yeah. What was it, Paul Carey?
You're absolutely spot on.
250 million in Arizona, and he's 9%. I mean, there's just so much room.
When I sold my company in 2019, they did a study, and Sarasota County, where 90% of my business was, had 620,000 people. I was at 26% market share,
wow,
which was highly, highly unusual. And, you know, just and to follow up on Aaron's point, I was not liked always by my competitors until they met me, and then they could kind of like me, because I was still active in ACCA. I was still active in my local ACCA, I always had the feeling it's not me against you. It's really us against everybody else, the government, which the utility at the time. No, we weren't concerned about private equity back then. So, you know, they're just a new boogeyman. Because I don't know if you guys have, I think Georgia Power used to be a good partner, and sometimes they're not. And, you know, you've dealt with that in the past. You've dealt with other threats to the industry, and you guys have successfully overcome them, and we will continue to do it. The question becomes is, as a whole, is the industry better? And even I saw that post you were talking about, John, and I did read it, but there were a lot of guys saying, no, they're really good because they're raising prices and not providing value, and I'm getting all the fallout. There's some guys very happy about it.
Well, to your point, I mean, even the regulatory changes, you got a choice of how to feel about that and react to that. And so many of our competitors were, you know, refrigerant change number one or two, three, four, whatever we're on now. We're looking at it so negatively, and I was like, guys, this is an opportunity. It all depends on how you look at it, how you react to it, what's your game plan, your strategy for implementing it. You know, do you go out there and you buy up a you know, large inventory of the 410A before it's gone at, yes, you know, at a discount? And then how do you market that to your customer base? It's going to raise prices. So you're going to, again, your revenue or your sales are going to grow without necessarily having to sell more units. Obviously, I want both. So yeah, to your point, it's all in your attitude to the change, because change is inevitable, and it's always, you know, there's more coming. How are we going to react to it? Make sure our team has a positive outlook on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The most important thing. You know, I find interesting in this new technology, and I guess I'm going to sound like a dinosaur here. And that's okay, because relative to you guys, I am. You know, the interesting thing is, if I were to restart my business today, I could restart it probably much easier, quicker, faster, with all the tools of language, you know, large language models, than I would have had been able to do 20 years ago. And to the consumer, it looks the same. Everybody's using ServiceTitan. Everybody is using some sort of AI call center bot, and everybody, it all starts to blend together and look the same. So a private equity company, the only difference is they spend more on marketing, and sometimes stupidly, than the small guy. And small guys hitting the Facebook pages, and they're targeting, you know, the next door pages, and then they're getting a lot of referrals from locals because they know they're small, but yet they present themselves with professional websites and their people are well connected. So it's fascinating to me where size in a market used to be everything, and now today it's become much more fragmented in that regard.
All right. Yeah, I think we've talked a little bit about this, but what hill will you die on as an operator in sales, et cetera? So is there a hill that you're willing to just die on as an operator in general?
I think I died on it recently.
All right. Well, the awakening has happened then.
I'm obviously not going to name names, but we had to part ways with a $6 million residential salesman. And so the hill that I died on is, if you're doing something that's immoral, unethical, to achieve, to succeed financially, then I can't trust you. And I don't care how many millions you sell, there's not a place for you at Estes.
100%.
Because everybody's looking at you. You don't think they didn't know what he was doing? They knew.
Now,
back waiting to see what are you going to do. And everybody's, that's not the first time we've had to do something similar to get rid of a top performer. Everybody else's performance increases.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah, you let that go. You set the tone for what's okay and what's not okay. You know, that's the downside to it.
Well, I appreciate your transparency on that. It's not always an easy one to bring up as an owner, as an operator, right? To even acknowledge that and have to say that you dealt with it. But that's the reality. I think every business has had some form of that, and you have to be able to get that out of the way quickly.
Yeah.
It's a hard hill to die on, but it's a respectful hill to die on.
You break it down to the ridiculous. You don't have to, how are you going to replace $6 million? You don't have to have one person replace $6 million. You got to have 130 people do just a little bit more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they usually do, because they finally got the guy that was probably getting the best leads and everything like that, and then acting immoral. And now you're given someone to step up and take a swing.
Chad, you want to take us down to the next one, or you want me to take it?
Yeah, let me. So I'm gonna switch up the order that we have on the text message here. What's wrong in the industry, but no one wants to admit it?
Jamie Stern.
Oh, you want to hear Jamie's answer?
I don't know if I want to even give an answer to that. No.
Jamie's okay. He's got wide open here. He's like, I can just let it rip.
Okay. No, I don't know if my opinion will jive with the industry, honestly.
It's your opinion.
It's your opinion. We want to learn and open up conversation about things in the industry that we should all acknowledge.
Okay. My opinion is digital marketing and AI and everything else and leveraging data is a beautiful thing. But I worry about what it's doing to real relationships between the company and the customer. So that's the thing nobody wants to talk about.
Yeah, we just have this same conversation around that disconnect potential too. I think it's a real conversation to have. I just don't know what comes of it yet, at least anytime soon, because it still feels pretty new. Like all this still feels really, really new.
You're starting to see a difference of opinion with the general public to AI in a more negative tone. I can tell you, we as of right now do not have AI handling any of our calls. And it was more to protect the image to the team the first time we hire or bring on an AI bot and have one less CSR. Are we now that family business that protects its family members? So we're going to be a little slow to that game purposefully. Plus AI just keeps getting better and better. So,
yep.
So yeah, that's one of our internal decisions that we're protecting our internal image, not the external one.
I think them, obviously Evoke is one of our sponsors on here. And I'm a fan if it works for your business. I think if and there's a lot of people that are implementing it in their companies and having a lot of success with it. It's not a set it and forget it still. But I'm a believer, in leveraging technology. But yeah, you have to manage what that, means internally or externally or whatever the perception is, right? But it's almost like you can ignore it to a certain point, I think. I think it's there at some level. It's like the old school answering services that we all used after hours, or it's the same. It's just a different, weirder version of it. Kind of like Bryce, wearing those stupid Meta glasses in the meetings. I'm like, shit, what did I just say? Bryce glasses.
No, we'll use it. We'll bring it in slowly, but we'll bring it in as a result of growth and not have to replace an existing CSR person.
Good.
And that'll be the smart way.
I think it's, you know when to bring them to the business, right? It's just, at least just another opportunity that you can use however you want. So I want to make sure I'm mindful of, you know, everybody's time. I know Chad's got to get boogie in too, but John, I appreciate you coming on, man. And I was glad we got to hang out, you know, a few months ago and just catch up again and kind of hear the story. And Jamie B, thanks for hopping on last minute. Man, I appreciate you.
Yeah.
Good to see you again.
Thank you, guys.
Man. It's good to see you guys. It's been too long.
Yeah, man, I think I'm still getting used to my sound effects, and I don't know if it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing. Right now, Chad's thinking it's a terrible idea to give me control of sound effects.
Well, you know, you're in a closet, so I don't know.
I know.
Yeah, but today I'm coming out of the closet, okay?
Uh-oh.
Well, John, congrats on the business, man. You've been there a hot minute since 2001. You guys are still continuing to grow and build. It's a successful business, right? It's a very successful business. I learned something new today in Napoleon Bonaparte's part of the business. I had no clue. That was interesting. But anyway, I appreciate both you guys coming on here. And listen, this new format for me is a lot of fun. You know, I'm not in the studio, you know, and hopefully it sounds fine, but like just kind of sitting and chopping up with you guys, like that's the vibe I hope to get from this thing, is all just kind of having a normal conversation around stuff in the industry that I like to talk about. And some people have different opinions, and that's what we're on here to share. And so, good to catch up with everybody. Jeannie, John, appreciate you. To Chad and Aaron.
Thank you, guys.
Until next time, to all of our listeners.
Continued success.
Yeah, thanks,
brother.
All the listeners, man, we really appreciate you. So we'll see you back in the VIP room next week. Until then, we'll see you.
What's the password?
Don't talk about it. Be about it.